Syndrome X, also known as metabolic syndrome, affects at least one-third of all adults in America and in other industrialized countries. It doubles the risk of heart disease and increases the risk of diabetes at least fivefold. But what triggers this high-risk health condition? Can it be prevented? Stay tuned for the answers to these and other questions. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Dr. Nerida, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. The choices you make today have a direct impact on your body's metabolism. Metabolic syndrome isn't a disease, but a strong signal that someone is on the road to serious health problems. Mark McNeil was well down that road before he turned his metabolic syndrome around. Here's his story.
I thought life was just great. I felt well, and then, bang, I got told you've got six arteries that are blocked, and 99% blocked. And so that was a bit of a surprise. I had to have five bypasses after that. After getting over the operation and what had to happen there, I went back onto my normal diet, which I thought was great. I had a good diet, I thought. Went back and had blood tests, and I was surprised. My cholesterol was raised, blood pressure was up, and at that point I was introduced to the CHIP program. I went onto it immediately. Straight away I thought, I have to do this. Within 2 months of going on the CHIP program, all halved. My cholesterol was halved, blood pressure was down. In fact, I had to lower my blood pressure pills because I was getting dizzy. So, hey, that was great. And then that's allowed me now to get back into the things I love. 2 weeks ago, I got back on the bike. And one thing I really noticed, when I used to bike before, I was always out of breath. I went out 2 weeks ago, I hit the hills, I didn't even get a sweat. I was doing some marvellous riding, you know, getting back on the bike, biking with my friends, living life to the full. And I just, to me, that my life is just beginning again.
He's made the changes, he's started over, and he's got a new lease on life. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine is a group of practitioners, teachers, and researchers committed to helping people improve their lifestyles. So we attended their annual meeting in order to bring their speakers to you. Our first speaker in this series is no stranger to Go Healthy. Wes Youngberg is a nutritionist with a doctorate in clinical preventive care. He practices at Youngberg Lifestyle and Nutritional Medicine in Temecula, California. Wes calls metabolic syndrome a metabolic mess. I asked him to explain why. Wes, in your book, Goodbye Diabetes, you also cover a lot of information about metabolic syndrome, and you call it the metabolic mess. What is metabolic syndrome?
Well, metabolic syndrome, from a diagnostic perspective, is having at least three out of the next five criteria. Number one, a fasting blood sugar 100 or higher. If your blood sugars are even a little bit high, that's one criteria. Number two is a blood pressure that's just a little bit high as well, 130 over 85. You know, not fully hypertension, but just getting a little bit high. Having a waist circumference that's a little large for men or women. Hey, that's a factor. A fourth factor is a triglyceride, blood fat level of 150 or higher, or an HDL that is low, lower than 50 in men, or lower than 45 in, it's the other way around, right? It's lower than 50 in women, lower than 45 in men.
Mm-hmm. And what are the health implications of having metabolic syndrome?
Well, the beauty of metabolic syndrome is it's looking at these small risk factors, which are traditionally seen as not so important. But when you group these together, you get this compounding effect, this negative synergy, and all of a sudden they become even worse than some of the serious risk factors. And they are they are essentially associated with what we call insulin resistance, or the body having to produce more insulin in order to control blood sugars. And that high insulin is what drives blood sugars high, it drives triglycerides high, it drives the excess weight up, it causes all kinds of metabolic problems that increase risk for heart disease and cancer and dementia, and even autoimmune disease.
That's a vast array of diseases. So how do people know if they have metabolic syndrome? These seem such subtle measures.
Right, and so clinically, since most doctors in their annual physicals for patients will check a full lipid profile, check the blood pressure, and check the blood sugar, we have all five of those criteria available, okay? But the way I look at this is I actually do a two-hour glucose tolerance test and measure insulin levels at fasting 1 and 2 hours, because it's the high insulin response that is the first sign of this metabolic mess. And so if Dr. Nancy Bohanna in 1990 was telling physicians, you need to check fasting insulin levels, it's one of the earliest signs of this metabolic mess. Well, a 1 or 2 hour insulin level right after a sugar drink or a meal is actually the most sensitive test for metabolic syndrome. The second is a blood sugar that is spiking right after a meal.
Coming up next, we'll show you a delicious bean dip. You don't want to miss it. But first, take a look at some tips from Doctor's Orders. I like living in America. It's a great country.
That's true, but we've given the world some bad health.
What do you mean?
Well, if you look at the standard American diet, it's full of fat, sugar, and salt.
You're right. America's given the world fast food. And eating the standard American diet gives you the standard American diseases like heart disease, cancer, strokes, diabetes.
And those diseases take us to the standard American doctor,
who prescribes the standard American drug, which treats the symptoms but not the cause,
that help us to die the standard American death.
So what kind of life does a standard American live?
Sad, 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 sad.
And it all begins with the standard American diet. So if you want to live a more abundant life, then you need to adopt God's original diet from the Garden of Eden. Fruits, grains, nuts, vegetables, and legumes.
But what about the burgers, fries, and Coke?
They'll make you sad. But the Creator's bounty, look at that.
Wow, that makes me glad.
Exactly. So, don't live the sad life, live the glad life. Doctor's Orders.
I know I'm looking for something. But what? Peace, purpose, meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
The idea of the Trinity is one that most Christians believe in. In fact, it came about the 3rd or 4th century. In fact, the word Trinity comes from the Latin word Trinitas. And the idea is that you have God, but then God has three other attributes. You have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. One of the best ways that I like to explain what the Trinity is through the example of an egg. I don't know about you, but I love eating eggs. And I want to assure you that none of these eggs were ever harmed during this production, okay? I have this egg in my hand, and when you take a look at the egg, it's an egg. But if you were to crack open an egg, there's a couple elements that you're gonna find. One is that there is an egg yolk. There's what you call the egg white. And then there's a shell. There's three different parts to an egg, but yet it's still an egg. And that's kind of the same idea with the idea of who God is. Even though there is just one God, there are three attributes of God. God the Father, guy who lives up in heaven, God the Son, Jesus Christ, who came here on this earth to help people understand who God really is. And then you have God the Holy Spirit. In fact, Jesus talks about the Holy Spirit right before he leaves from the earth and goes to heaven. And he says, don't worry, don't be worried. I'm going to send you the Comforter, also called the Holy Spirit. There's three parts to God, but there's still just one God.
I love learning about my ancestors. It makes me feel like I have a place in history. And I always tell my family, the more you learn about your past, the more you understand the present. But the past doesn't have all the answers, especially about the future. There's so much uncertainty and so much fear in the world today, which is why I'm so happy that I found something that brings together my past, my present, and my future. I know that no matter what happens, there is a plan. And this gives me hope.
Death is the only inescapable, unavoidable, sure thing. We are sentenced to die the day we're born.
Death is a debt we all must pay.
Some people are so afraid to die that they never begin to live.
Every man must do two things alone. He must do his own believing and his own dying.
Death is not a period, but a comma in the story of life.
He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.
Welcome to Go Healthy's Kitchen, and today we're going to make a black bean dip. And black beans are so versatile, but they're great in dips. They have that really smooth, creamy flavour and taste to them. For this recipe, you're going to want to have one can of black beans, rinsed and drained, one small tomato, chopped, one clove of garlic, peeled and minced, two tablespoons of red onion, diced finely, two tablespoons of lime juice, one tablespoon of fresh cilantro leaves, and salt to taste. With me now in the studio is Lyshall, and Lyshall's here to help me make this. She's going to be my chef today. Thanks for coming along.
You're welcome.
Now let's put all of these things in the bowl and blend them up. It's that easy. So in go the black beans, and that's a can rinsed and drained. So very convenient, very quick and easy. It's so tempting to make your dips just to buy them off the shelf at the supermarket. But when you can make them yourself, you can get some really fresh herb flavors in there and the fresh raw garlic and things like that. Plus, it's a whole lot healthier. You'll see that we're not putting any fat in here at all. And yes, it's going to be a nice creamy dip. You can get your hands dirty if needs be. Garlic. It's the secret ingredient here, as is the lime juice. And finally, some salt. Good, and we're going to blend this up.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely, thank you. You haven't used one of those before, have you?
No.
You did really well. They have a few little secrets to using them, but they're handy little machines. All right, so let's come over here and put our dip in the bowl. Now you can serve these with corn chips, with veggie sticks. You can even turn this into a sandwich spread. You know, you might put it on the bread and then put some salad on top, and that makes a really nice healthy way to get your protein. Legumes, of course, are really high in fiber, and it's the kind of fiber that really helps with digestion and also to bring cholesterol down. So this is a really great way to get your fiber and your protein. Then we might put a little sour cream. This is some tofutti. Put that on there and garnish it. There, how's that? You ready to taste it?
Yep.
Okay, what would you like? Some celery, that's a good choice. Okay, let's see what we think of this. It's yummy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Would you make that again at home?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would too. This is a great one. Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
It was really fun.
That recipe's become a summer favorite for me. Now let's hear from Lynn, how she slowly slipped into that metabolic mess.
I felt that I was living a healthy lifestyle, but I was starting to have a few problems that I attributed to aging. I did not consider myself obese, but I had gained 40 pounds over a period of about 25 years. My cholesterol was raising, my blood pressure was beginning to creep up, I was on medication, a series of medications for lowering my cholesterol, but the condition that affected my lifestyle the most was the osteoarthritis in my knees. I had very limited mobility and limited range of motion, constant pain, and this was affecting the interaction with my grandchildren. When I first began making changes through the CHIP program, pounds began to melt off right away. Inflammation and other symptoms of my osteoarthritis in my knees just disappeared. I was able to eliminate medication that I was taking for cholesterol. I felt so much better, had so much energy, and I truly believe I was healthier than I was in my 40s. CHIP has given me a second chance for an active life and a long life. I'm really looking forward to being an active part of my grandchildren's lives as they grow, and I've chosen to be healthy for the rest of my life.
And many of us don't realize that we have that choice to be healthy for the rest of our lives. Now it's time to delve into the details of what metabolic syndrome entails. Here's Wes Youngberg to tell us more. Can metabolic syndrome be controlled or even reversed?
Absolutely. It can be controlled in the same ways that prediabetes and diabetes can be reversed. And metabolic syndrome always is reversible if, and this is the big if we actually address the cause of the problem. And so oftentimes people are looking for a medication to deal with the problem, but metabolic syndrome is caused by the wrong diet, the lack of activity, stress that doesn't have an outlet, and usually that outlet is going to be physical activity. So it's critical that we become more active as a society. Doing light activity, fun little things right after meals can powerfully decrease our risk of developing metabolic syndrome and the cancers and heart disease that can come from that.
So the walking after meals will bring insulin down?
That's right. The walking immediately after the meal And I mean, as soon as I tell people, as soon as you're done with the meal, push away, go for a light walk. And sometimes the women say, well, wait a minute, we need to do the dishes first. And I say, here, make a deal with your husband or your family, says that I'll go a walk with you if you help me with the dishes. Okay? And so after a husband goes for a walk, they're much more likely to help with the dishes because their brain's working better now.
How long should that walk be?
It really doesn't matter. A little walk is the most important thing is get out the door, right? Exercise. Get out the door, do something. If you're enjoying yourself, then do it a little bit longer. So I tell people at least 5 minutes, but encourage them to do it 15, 20 minutes if they can.
Mm. But 5 minutes, very doable.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
And very effective as well.
Right. So just that little thing can make that much difference.
In fact, if you have prediabetes or diabetes, every minute that you walk immediately after your meal will decrease the spike of your blood sugar from 1 to 3 points. So with a half hour walk after a big meal, you can end up with a 90 point reduction in your blood sugars at 1 hour.
Mm. That's impressive. And that's easy to make that goal, isn't it? When you know those mm-hmm. little increments. So
that's
thank
right.
you for that. Now, insulin resistance doesn't happen overnight. How does it happen?
I think insulin resistance is something that can happen overnight if you don't sleep. Okay, so as we were talking earlier, when we don't sleep adequately, the body becomes stressed. It's not healing very well, and that makes the muscle and the liver more resistant to insulin. So now the pancreas has to make more insulin in order to compensate for that resistance. And of course, it's that high insulin then that drives the risk for high blood pressure, heart disease, cancer, and so forth.
So if it can happen almost overnight with poor sleep, can you also fix it overnight?
Perfect. I'm glad you said that. Yes. Really, insulin resistance can literally many times be reversed overnight. Now, for some people, it takes a week or maybe two. But can you, something that is so serious, can you believe that by doing the right things, by exercising daily, doing light activity after meals, choosing the healthy foods, eating a more plant-based diet, just doing those things regularly, within days, the insulin resistance is largely reversed. We've measured this within a 10-day or 2-week period, and insulin resistance is dramatically reversed in that short of time.
Now, you talk about diet. What about someone does a cleanse or a fast for a weekend? They go to a health retreat, or they just do it at home. What does that do?
Yeah, just a one-day fast. In fact, even a 5-hour fast can reverse insulin resistance significantly. And this is one reason that I discourage people from eating frequently. The modern day kind of craze of grazing only works if you're eating the right foods, but you're better off doing a 5-hour fast between every meal.
So from the end of one meal, 5 hours till the start of the next meal.
Roughly, you know, and so, but the idea of eating 2 or 3 hours, every 2 to 3 hours, not good for the digestive system, and it's certainly not good for individuals who have insulin resistance. And I believe that the data shows that we're looking at 80-90% of the American public have insulin resistance. Okay, and that therefore producing too much insulin in order to compensate. Blood sugars may be perfect, but that insulin resistance is a problem. So eating a good breakfast and then not eating anything, but maybe water, right? Taking water in between meals and then at lunch eating again, and then 5 hours later eating a dinner meal, that gives enough time for the body to recuperate and not gradually develop this resistance.
Now, for some people, a five hours without food is a very difficult concept to swallow.
Right, and that's why for some people need to work into that. And so my goal, because I work with a lot of patients who are hypoglycemic, they have this reactive hypoglycemia or adrenal fatigue, and they have learned that they feel better if they eat every couple hours. But see, the problem is they're not addressing the key issue. And that key issue is to make sure that they're eating a well-balanced meal that has healthy high-fiber carbs, healthy proteins, plant-based proteins, and healthy plant-based fats. If you get all those together with a meal, that stabilizes digestion and blood sugars for usually 4 to 5 hours.
So instead of getting that sharp peak up and back, you level out that same area under that curve, but you're shaping it this way.
That's right.
And so you don't get the hypoglycemia. You get more support for your adrenal, and it will sustain you.
And you don't wear down digestion in the process.
Right.
Yeah.
Sean, our trainer, is up next, so get ready to start fixing that metabolic mess. But first, let's take a look at today's health news. In the headlines today, heavy drinking and metabolic syndrome. Sleeping too much and too little wakens chronic disease, and exercise better than drugs at lowering death. Alcohol consumption is related to the incidence and development of metabolic syndrome. A recent analysis showed that those who drink heavily are 85% more likely to develop metabolic syndrome. So avoid challenging your liver with a toxicant. After all, it is your major organ of metabolism. Too little sleep and too much sleep are both associated with chronic diseases, including diabetes, anxiety, coronary heart disease, strokes, and obesity in adults aged over 45. These are the findings of a new study involving 55,000 participants published in the journal Sleep. Too little sleep was defined as 6 hours or less, and too much as 10 hours or more. Here is more evidence supporting the recommendation that 7 to 9 hours sleep is the ideal amount for optimum health. Exercise may be just as effective as medications at lowering the risk of death for those recovering from a heart attack and in preventing diabetes. This finding from a review just published in the British Medical Journal of a number of randomized controlled trials of exercise. For stroke patients, physical activity may be more effective at preventing death than drug treatments, including blood thinners. The number of trials involving exercise, though, is limited, so don't expect a change in prescribing habits just yet. But remember, the side effects of exercise are mainly side benefits. So what are you waiting for? Get moving. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news.
When I lived in Japan, I had a friend who was an artist. She painted beautiful, intricate designs on silk fabric that were used to make kimonos. She invited me to her studio, and when I walked in, I saw this long table in the middle of this room. And on this table was about 10 to 12 yards of silk fabric. The work that she would do was so detailed, so intricate, but yet so amazingly beautiful. She would take her time, and sometimes it would take her 6 months to finish a 10-yard panel. I visited her one day, but she was doing something very interesting. With a magnifying glass in hand, she was going over every single inch of that fabric, checking her work to make sure that everything was good. It took her a long time because she did it slowly and carefully. And then she put down the magnifying glass, and with a smile of satisfaction on her face, she said, "It is good." The Bible tells us that God created this world and all living things in 6 days. And he rested after he was finished, because all was good.
What can a couple do to overcome infidelity, especially when someone is having difficulty trusting again?
Affairs usually happen when one of the spouses feels that his emotional needs are not being met. Men and women are different. Women need affection. Men need sex. The quicker they realize what the needs are and meet those emotional needs, the easier it's going to be to negotiate marriage.
Definitely. And since infidelity causes a compromise of trust in the relationship, it's important for the person who has caused the offense to be accountable and to behave in a way that shows that they're remorseful and that they don't want to ever get into these behaviors again. So seek help from a professional counselor and ask God to help you rebuild the trust in your relationship.
Welcome back. Get off the couch because it's time to exercise. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Great. What have you got for us
today? All right. So today we're going to keep it very simple. All right. Very quick warm up. Very, very traditional exercise. Jumping jacks.
All right.
So you can set a timer, but we're going to do it for about maybe 10 seconds. All right. All right. 3, 2, and 1. Go. 1, 2. You could either count or set your timer, but this is a great way to get the heart rate up.
Yeah.
At the same time, prepare your legs for exercise, okay? I like to keep my arms bent in 3, 2, and 1, okay? Shake it out. Again, you can pick up the tempo. You can go a little bit faster, a little bit slower. It's totally up to you depending on your fitness level.
Okay.
All right, so the first exercise, we're going to keep it very, very simple. All right, we're going to use a stability ball. You can get one of these for about $15.
Right.
Depending on where you get it. Some with water in it just to add some additional resistance. We're just going to stand up, but we're going to do a squat, all right? So we're going to push the ball forward as we squat.
All right.
Okay, so you look at that view, and this is how it looks. We're working a little bit of the delt and coming back up. Make sure you bring your legs down, squeeze your quads, extend the ball all the way out. What you're really aiming to do is work your quads and your shoulder, because the next exercise will be working the shoulder as well, okay?
Right, so we're working with this, we're actually able to work upper body and lower body at the same time.
That's right.
And that's going to give you more
calorie
advantage from the time you're spending exercising.
Absolutely, one more. Stand up and go. Again, you can pick up the pace based on your fitness level as well, okay? So our second exercise, I like to do a mixture of core exercises in the midst of doing total body exercises. Okay, so this one is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna, my Frisbee, we're not playing Frisbee now. I actually, you know what, you'll be my student and I'll be the trainer. I'll pretend like I'm a trainer.
All right, just for a difference.
Yeah.
What do I do?
You move over just a little bit.
There okay.
You lean back, lay back. And what I want you to do is hold the ball.
All right.
Okay. And with your feet up. What we're gonna do is work a little bit more, put both feet up.
Feet up.
Yep, a little bit higher. And what we're gonna do is put this ball to the outside of your calf. There you go, bring it back to the center and bring it on this side. Now, you see you see what just happened, right?
I'm gonna turn this way so that our viewers can see that a little easier.
So you put your feet up, and the goal here is to put your feet up and have the ball go on the outside of your calves. What this is doing is just attacking your abs in a different way, working your oblique muscles,
the leg
handles. Okay?
Yep.
So you can go back, all the way back, touch the ball to the ground, and come back.
Uh-huh.
Make sure that you blow out the air from your abdominal area as you come up, okay? You don't want to have a belly full of air, because it makes no sense to contract with air in your stomach.
No.
Give me two more. One more. One. Last one. And perfect. Good job.
And what that does is you've got your abdominal muscles don't just come straight. There are four layers.
Absolutely.
And some wrap in this direction. So that's really working those ones and building them, because that's going to give you a nice tight waist.
There you go. The smaller your waist, the more shapely you look too.
Yeah.
Also, you got to remember the core is also your back as well. And I think that that also involves a little bit more of your back as well. So this one is going to bring it all together. All right, okay. We're going to work the shoulder and we're going to work the core. Okay, and all I want you to do here is hold it. All right, 5 seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
That was a good workout.
Yes. So there you go. You got 3 exercises. You can choose a timer or a specific amount of reps and just mix it up, you know, have some fun. Just
keep cycling through.
There you go.
That's great. Well, we better cool down.
Let's cool down. All right. Take a nice deep breath. Inhale and exhale. 3, 2, and 1. Open your hands up and back down. Stretch out that lower back that we just used for the core exercises and come up nice and slow. Do not rush coming up because you go down real fast.
Right? Yeah. Excellent. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Good job.
Is a tomato a vegetable or a fruit? Well, when it comes to preventing ovarian cancer, tomatoes might be the queen of fruit. Women who eat tomatoes more than 5 times per week have a significantly lower risk of ovarian cancer than women who occasionally or never eat them. Women who regularly consumed fruit also had a lower risk, according to the Adventist Health Study. Salsa, anyone? Eating tomatoes at least 5 times a week is another ageless advantage.
Thank you for your questions. I love to hear from you. Sharon called from Shreveport, Louisiana. Does smoking affect the emotional center of the brain? Well, Sharon, it does, and that's sometimes called the pleasure center. This is where addictions are centered. In love, I believe God created that part of our brain as a blessing, but the evil one has recruited it to bring us misery. Nora called, my 48-year-old nephew has had a ruptured aneurysm of the aorta and multiple surgeries. He spent the last 2 months in hospital. Can you help him? Well, Nora, this is, well, I should say aneurysms, that's pretty devastating when they rupture, but aneurysms are a form of atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries. Now that he's getting over the surgery, and if he's willing, he can do what we saw Mark do in our first video. He changed to a whole food, plant-based diet. Your nephew would need to stop smoking and begin to do physical activity. Managing stress is also important. Now, Mark mentioned that the CHIP program was the way he went about making change. And that's a really supportive program. There are others like the Full Plate Diet and Creation Health. There are different ones like that. So if he wants to go to chiphealth.com and see if there's a program nearby, a CHIP program nearby, that might be helpful for him. Ernie called, I've had a heart attack and had 2 stents. My cholesterol has never been more than 150. Why am I on a statin? Well, Ernie, the reason that your doctor's chosen to do this is because it's been shown that taking a statin after a heart attack reduces the risk of having another heart attack and reduces the risk of death. Now, on Dr. Esselstein's program to reverse heart disease, 150 is the upper limit for cholesterol, so be sure to keep it down whichever way you choose to do that. However, if you decide to take the statin, please also take 90 to 100 milligrams of CoQ10 every day, which will help reduce the side effects from the statin. Thanks for sending your questions. Please keep them rolling in. I love to hear from you. Remember the numbers 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can like us on Facebook and then post your questions there or message me. And for people texting outside, or for people texting and those outside of America, the number's 301-960-5144. Now, before we go back to Dr. Youngberg, does this whet your appetite? Onions are the 3rd most consumed vegetable in the United States. They are so versatile, great for breakfast, casseroles, barbecues, and even holiday dinners. They give flavor, color, and texture to a wide variety of dishes and cuisines. 87% of the United States onion crop are yellow. They're a great reliable standby for cooking almost anything. 8% of the crops are red onions, and with their wonderful flavor and color, it's a good choice for roasting or for fresh. White onions make up just 5% of the US onion crop, and they're used in salads, white sauces, and they're the traditional onion for classical Mexican cuisine. And because they're one of the top 10 antioxidant veggies, be sure to have some most days. Bon appetit. We're talking about metabolic syndrome, but one of the underlying problems is inflammation, isn't it? Why this association between insulin resistance, the metabolic mess, and inflammation?
Inflammation is a key to many, many health problems. We know that the primary trigger of the diabetes genes, the heart disease genes, and many oncogenes, cancer genes, is inflammation. And so regardless of what's causing the inflammation, if we have this inflammation in the body, that's going to trigger these genes, these bad genes, and cause many downstream effects that are negative to our health. Now, we can actually measure inflammation.
How's that?
Well, there's several blood tests. Traditionally, we used a sedimentation rate or erythrocyte sedimentation rate or SED rate. But nowadays, we're using more what's called the cardiac CRP. This is a C-reactive protein blood test that measures systemic or body-wide inflammation in the blood. It doesn't tell us what's causing the inflammation, but it tells us we better start looking and figuring out what caused it. Now, originally, the Dr. Ridker, who is a cardiologist out of Harvard who championed the use of this test many years ago, he has told me, he says, the number one cause of inflammation in the body is an unhealthy diet. And he's a researcher that does all the work with drug studies on how to lower inflammation. But he, because of his understanding of the evidence in the medical literature, says there's nothing more powerful than a healthy diet in reversing inflammation. And we, in our studies that we did in Guam on our patients that did two-week intensives, we showed that on average in just 2 weeks, you can lower inflammation in the body by 50%.
In 2 weeks?
Just 2 weeks.
With a healthy diet?
And it probably happened in 3 to 4 days, but we only did the pre and post at 2 weeks.
And that was with diet change?
This was a comprehensive lifestyle program that mm-hmm. involved daily exercise, activity after every meal, having a 100% plant-based diet, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, not eating snacks in between, and then learning about what makes the body healthier, but also paying attention to what we're thinking about, our emotions, and have we any resentment in our lives? How to resolve issues in our lives that require giving or accepting forgiveness? Those are not forgiving somebody is a key part of inflammation.
Really?
Yeah. So unforgiveness is inflammation in the body chemically. Okay, forgiveness is one of the most powerful anti-inflammatories.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Now, I'm thinking about this internal turmoil, and that makes me think about stress. Mm. Stress raises all kinds of stress hormones, mm-hmm. and people talk about the association between stress and belly fat.
That's right. Well,
and you're talking about measuring waist circumference with
right.
the metabolic syndrome, so
that's
these
right.
must be all interrelated.
Yeah, they're all interrelated. In fact, what happens when we're under stress, the body goes into fight or flight mode, and that involves the adrenal glands releasing stress hormones, adrenaline, and especially cortisol. Now, cortisol is a very important and healthy hormone if it's balanced. Right. Too little of it is really bad, causes immune problems. Too much of it is really bad and causes immune problems as well. So we want to be right there in the middle range of cortisol. Many people have been so stressed so long that their adrenals are like fatigued.
Flabby.
And they're tired. Mm. And so they will go offline. And so adrenal cortisol drops off. Blood sugars get too low because you have to have cortisol to tell the liver to release sugar. So once the blood sugars drop too low, people get all shaky and they get stressed, and now they want to eat something to get their blood sugar. So they eat some sugar or some candy, blood sugars shoot up, insulin shoots up, insulin then drives the sugar too low, then the adrenals have to produce more cortisol, and the vicious cycle occurs. And so high cortisol leads to high insulin production, which can lead to extra depositing of fat in the belly area.
It's all a vicious circle, isn't it? Now, do you think that the belly fat contributes to the insulin resistance?
I think it does, but it's not the main issue. I think the main issue is that insulin resistance causes belly fat, and once we remove the insulin resistance, the belly fat starts going away. So that's why I tell people it's really not all about weight. Instead of focusing on a weight loss program, because a lot of people do that in a very inappropriate way. In fact, one study showed that a woman after losing over 20 pounds with liposuction, okay, had no change in insulin resistance whatsoever. Okay. In other words, if you don't change what you eat, if you don't change your activity style, regardless of how much fat you have on your body, you're still insulin resistant. I know many patients who look thin, who look lean, but actually have significant insulin resistance, and they need to do the same things. They don't need to lose any weight. They just need to reverse their resistance to insulin, which causes so many other problems.
So there are a lot of things you can do to reverse metabolic syndrome. Stay there, go healthy for good. We'll be back after a short break.
The American Civil War lasted from 1861 to 1865, 4 years of misery for the nation. The death toll was in excess of 700,000, more than in all the other wars in the United States or involving the United States, from the Revolutionary War down to the Vietnam War. But what if I were to tell you there is a battle raging right now with a far higher death toll? And then what if I told you that war began in heaven? Well, it did, and you're involved. Now let me explain. Long ago, God created a perfect world. But according to the Bible, it's hard to understand, but there was war in heaven. And Lucifer, a perfect angel, became Satan, who was kicked out of heaven and came down here to the earth. Now, why would he rebel? You know why? He wanted worship. He was jealous and he wanted to sit in God's place and receive the worship that belongs only to God. When he came down here to the earth, he didn't lose sight of that objective. He still wants that worship. So he convinces the world that God is bad and that people are better off without God. Now you get to decide who's telling the truth, and you can choose whose side you're on.
There is a garden in every childhood, an enchanted place where colors are brighter, the air softer, and the morning more fragrant than ever.
Of all life seasons, childhood is the most beautiful.
Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see.
Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him Father.
A child can ask 1,000 questions that the wisest man cannot answer.
When I approach a child, I have two thoughts: affection for what he is today and respect for what he can become.
There are no 7 wonders of the world in the eyes of a child. There are 7 million.
Children are 1/3 of our population and all of our future.
He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me.
We're back. Remember, I'm here to answer your health questions. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can send a text to 301-960-5144. Here's Nancy with her own story of progress.
Well, I was about 50, a little over 50, and I had been obese for about 30 years and weighed about 80 pounds over my wedding day weight. I just, you know, felt tired all the time, didn't have a lot of motivation for doing much of anything. I knew I needed to lose the weight, and I needed a program that I could do easily and for the rest of my life. When I found out about CHIP, I began to apply the principles that were taught. I began to lose weight. The weight just melted off, and within a short time, I was feeling a whole lot better. I was able to fit back into my wedding dress for my 35th wedding anniversary, something I had always dreamed of and didn't think I'd ever be able to do again. And as I was walking one day, I had so much energy that I just felt like bursting into a run, which I hadn't done for many years. On top of that, I was able to play with my grandson in the park, and I wasn't getting sick anymore like I used to. CHIP just gave me my life back, and it's a lifestyle that I can do for the rest of my life.
And if you're battling with weight, find a lifestyle that will see you through the rest of your life. Let's see what Wes Youngberg has to say about the battle of the bulge. Wes, metabolic syndrome, you mentioned you can have elevated cholesterol, elevated triglycerides. So many patients with metabolic syndrome will be advised by their doctors to use a cholesterol-lowering medication, say a statin. Mm-hmm. What's your advice in that situation?
Well, that's interesting. There was a recent study done at a university exercising middle-aged men, and half of them took statins and half of them did not, but they all exercised every day. And at the end of 10 weeks, the group who was not using the statins had a 15% improvement in VO2 max and aerobic capacity and exercise fitness. Mm-hmm. The group on the statin did not even have a 1% increase in fitness, even though they had done exactly the same exercise. Now, that was a powerful study in my mind, because that scared me, actually, because mm-hmm. that means that if that study shows to be reproduced in the same way, that all these millions of people that are on statins are essentially wiping out the fitness benefit of exercise. And of course, daily exercise is far more important to our health than any medicine could be that relates to chronic disease. And so that's a big concern. The other concern I have is that statins actually increase insulin resistance, which is really odd, because statins lower inflammation by 30%. And all natural things, lifestyle, foods, exercise, that lowers inflammation actually lowers insulin resistance. But statins, even though they lower inflammation dramatically, actually increase insulin resistance. And, of course, metabolic syndrome is a problem with insulin resistance. Diabetes, prediabetes, that's what they are. They're insulin resistance problems. So we shouldn't be really on a medication that makes the original cause of the problem worse.
So,
and studies have shown that women on statins are 40 to 59% higher risk of developing diabetes.
So we're losing sight of the wood for the trees.
Right.
And what we should be doing is doing lifestyle intervention, then reassessing cholesterol, triglycerides, and if still needed, go on the lowest dose possible.
In other words, we should be following the current guidelines more aggressively, focusing first on lifestyle therapy and not just give a handout to the patient and say, here, try this, but here's a prescription because I know you were not going to do that very well.
Right. So now you mentioned a healthy diet for someone with metabolic syndrome. Just run quickly through that in our last few minutes of what that healthy diet might look like.
That healthy diet starts with having a good breakfast. And when I say good breakfast or lunch, I'm talking about looking for a healthy high-fiber carbohydrate, a whole grain cereal, oatmeal, oat groats, something that's wholesome, okay? Adding to that maybe a few nuts, some fruit, okay? That's balance. So you're getting something that has a healthy fat, healthy protein, healthy high-fiber carbohydrate. As long as you follow those guidelines, I don't think you can go wrong, nutritionally speaking. Mm-hmm. And then for lunch and dinner, having lots of vegetables, big salad, maybe having a few nuts, you know, on that as well. A few avocado slices, not a whole avocado, you know, a few avocado slices would be good there too.
Now you're mentioning quite a bit of fat, nuts, avocados.
Well, I'm mentioning it, but maybe not quite a bit. I'm mentioning it maybe more than a lot of people do. But I am a believer in the appropriate use of healthy whole plant food fats in moderation to help control blood sugars, to help sustain a sense of satisfaction and satiety over a 4 to 5 hour period. If we're just eating carbohydrates, for a lot of people, certainly for myself, I'm not going to be satisfied.
You'll peter out before the 5 hours.
And then you're more likely to look for a snack that's unhealthy before the next meal.
Now, what about legumes?
I think that legumes are the king of all foods. So as long as you don't have an allergy or sensitivity to them, absolutely use legumes on a regular basis, even a daily basis, because using legumes in one meal will improve the body's sensitivity to insulin, not just at that one meal, but for the next 3 consecutive meals. So which means that your body now has to produce less insulin to control blood sugars, and less insulin means a lower risk for cancer, lower risk for heart disease, lower risk of plaque development, and lower risk of diabetes.
Don't become a victim of metabolic syndrome. Eat lots of veggies, legumes, and whole grains. Manage stress. Get less screen time and more activity time. Lose weight. If the cards are stacked against you because of your genes, then turn off the genes with good, healthy choices and make good health one of your top priorities. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.